In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a 7-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. This is episode 499. One more before the big one, Scott. The big 500 is next week. It's a milestone and a half, I think.
It's a lot of episodes, man. We're talking about it as aging us. When we talk about the fact that we've recorded 500 episodes. And, you know, we've done it at a cadence of, for 2 years, was it 2 years? We did it once a week. And then the last 3 years, we've done twice a week in season, once a week off season, and then, you know, the insanity of the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly when we switched to twice a week in the season. It was probably 2017 when the team was playing better.
When we're having fun with it, we're like, hey, let's do this more.
I don't think 2016, that wasn't exactly a very exciting year until they traded away everyone at the deadline. And I think you and I both started to enjoy the podcast more when we could talk about the future of the team and some young players and Gary Sanchez, believe it or not, who back in 2016 in the second half of the season looked like he was going to be the centerpiece of the Yankees' next dynasty. That's how good he was in 2016. And this is where we are. We're here this week and it's like, will the Yankees even tender him a freaking contract? It's amazing how far that has come in 3-4 years or whatever.
I mean, that just speaks to the way that baseball prospects pan out most of the time, I think. You have a lot of guys who come out of absolutely nowhere that will surprise the living shit out of you. And then you have guys who are hyped up, who just don't live up to the expectation. And I think you see that more sometimes with catchers just because of the breakdown. But
we didn't actually expect them to non-tender him. They did tender him a contract. We don't know. We're recording this Thursday morning. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. We don't know exactly what the offer to him was. It's probably going to be around $5 million, which is what he made last year in arbitration. This is the second year of arbitration.
There will be a bump, but yeah, it won't be much.
$5.5 million or something like that. Spotrac had him estimated at $6.4 million.
Spotrac.
What is it?
I don't know. I say Spotrac. I just assume it's spot track. Spotrac? I don't know.
Do you say spot track? Because there's only one T.
I just say it fast.
<That's>
so
like,
you'll never. So you would never
Costanza.
Know.
That's a Costanza when he doesn't know how to say something. He just goes fast and mumbles through it. Yeah, flabbing.
Exactly. Spot track.
We didn't expect him to get non-tendered because that would just be an asinine move, I think.
There's no value in non-tendering him. I mean, people are talking about the fact that he might get non-tendered because of he had a terrible year last year. Yeah,
we're not denying that.
No, there's no denying that. I would destroy him for that. But the value is not to non-tender him. The value is still to tender him at even a $6 million contract, and you have at worst a backup catcher at $6 million with potential.
At worst, you're taking a flyer on a guy who has the ability somewhere. Maybe he's never going to regain that ability, but he could. You're taking a $6 million flyer on it. I think that's worth it, especially for a team like the Yankees.
That's crazy, the fact that we're taking a $6 million flyer on Gary Sanchez, the guy that we were anointing.
When you break it down, though, that's what it is.
Essentially. He had a terrible year. When you break down the numbers, he had a terrible year. Everywhere.
There's nothing good about the year, really. There's nothing good about... He has had more bad, much more bad than good since 2018.
So the problem with Gary Sanchez is that the good is so concentrated that people are like drinking it and getting high for years over the concentrated success of Gary Sanchez.
Right. A singular home run against the Mets or a playoff home run aided by the gusting wind in Cleveland.
I'm more talking about the 2016 concentrated, like, oh, you know,
17.
You have,
he was very, very,
you know, when you get back in the day, you get orange juice, like you concentrated and frozen, and then you get put water in it to actually drink it. Like that's Gary Sanchez. He's the frozen orange juice.
That's not good for you. Now we know that's too much sugar.
It's not good.
Gary Sanchez is too much sugar.
You gotta dilute that and level the expectations a little bit, set it out over a longer period of time. And he hasn't been able to do it.
Where do you think it went wrong for Gary Sanchez? Who do you put blame on?
I think if we knew that answer, we would be not talking about this, to be honest. I put the blame on Gary Sanchez.
Okay,
squarely.
Yes. Obviously, the game is the blame goes on Gary Sanchez. He's the player. But do you think the organization failed him a bit?
No, I don't. In this instance, I do not think the organization failed Gary Sanchez at all. In fact, I think that the organization actually gave him a little bit of a bump when they recognized, you know, potentially some areas where he was going to go awry. What was that, single A, double A, when he got pulled back from the futures game, pulled back from fall league?
Yeah, he got there was a little bit of like a disciplining. That's so long ago, though.
I know, but that
about
what they did is they identified the player, identified what the player needed, and to me, as an organization, it's more about how you're coming up through the. They took their sweet ass time with him because he was young.
They
he was
take
16
their
years
sweet
old.
Ass time with everybody though. That's their
but
MO
for him,
to
it
take
was
time with prospects.
But they took their time with him and actually seemingly developed him.
Well, it looked like it was going to work because in 2016, he almost won the Rookie of the Year by playing 2 months in the bigs. And then in 2017, he was an all-star level catcher, one of the best, maybe the best catcher in the league in 2017. Okay.
So at that point, to me, the organization has done their job. They've developed the player. The player has come up. The player has seen success in the major leagues. It's now on the player to sustain success at that point. Yes, obviously you're leaning on the coaching staff, leaning on the organization still, but at this point now it's the talent of the player, the motivations of the player, the abilities of the player to now continue this and make sure that he's putting himself in the best position to succeed. The organization put him in a good position to succeed.
So there was an article in The Athletic, and I'll get to it in a second, that sort of broke down why Gary Sanchez has been struggling so much defensively and offensively. And the league trends have not helped Gary Sanchez. But I'm more trying to get at, this is maybe impossible for you and I to gauge. Did the organization, for lack of a better word, just F him up? Because they tried to overmanage Gary Sanchez.
Yeah,
so
again,
in 2017, someone thought that Joe Girardi was too hard on Gary Sanchez. But Gary Sanchez was playing the best he's ever played in the major leagues in 2016 and 2017 under Joe Girardi. Then Brian Cashman says, okay, we need a manager who's going to essentially relate better to the players. Not specifically for Gary Sanchez, but that was a big point. Gary Sanchez and Joe Girardi do not relate to one another. Aaron Boone will relate to players like Gary Sanchez. So here's Aaron Boone, 2018. And Gary Sanchez starts to slip. He starts to go into prolonged slumps. There's hustle gate where he doesn't run down to first base in a game. He's got injury after injury. 2019 gets even worse than 2018. And then 2020, he's benched for Kyle Higashioka in the playoffs. Okay, it has been like an absolutely fall off the cliff for Gary Sanchez. He is benched for Kyle Higashioka. Are you kidding me? Kyle Higgy is basically a quad A catcher, okay? And Gary Sanchez was benched for him.
He definitely proved more than that. He's a competent backup catcher in the league so far.
If it was not for Gerrit Cole, for whatever reason, loving to throw to Higgy.
Well, guess what? That's a reason, and there was a reason for that as well.
Okay, whatever you want to call Higgy, Gary Sanchez getting benched for him is a joke for Gary Sanchez. That's a joke. If you're Sanchez, you're benched for Higgy, you've hit rock bottom.
The thing is that all of the things that you just mentioned are player issues. I don't care. Look, if the organization
why the organization did
the
a
organization
lot of those
did
things.
Not
they keep trying to
Girardi.
Change him. Oh, do the one knee stance. Do this stance. Do this, Gary. Be this, Gary. How about just let him play like he was in 16 and 17 when he was the best hitting catcher in baseball.
Well, I think they tried to do that, and they don't know why the fact that there was a drop off then. And so they're like, okay, well, I guess we got to fix something. Let's try to fix it. Because Gary, for some reason, you're broken.
So much tinkering.
There's not, but this was a reaction to the player. It wasn't just tinkering to tinker. This wasn't Jabba coming up to the organization.
I was just going
to
say, you stole the words out of my mouth. This is the most they've tinkered with a player since Jabba.
That's not true. There have been, I'm sure,
plenty
over the behind
the
scenes.
Decade and a half where they've tinkered more than Gary than Jabba.
Because Jabba was very different. It's not like they took Gary from catcher and put him on first base and then back to catcher and then first base and then back to catcher and then first base.
There's no apples to apples comparison between reliever and starter to catcher and something.
Well, whatever it is, it's a different position in the game. It's not the same. It's literally different because you have to train differently. So yeah, it's a little bit of a comparison. You have to train differently to play first base. You have to train differently to play catcher. If you're not training to do one, you're probably not going to be as good in the, if you're training to do two, you're not going to be as good in the one. So it's not the same by any means. They were trying to help him, and Jabba, they just completely screwed. And look at him now. You know, it's a damn shame.
I agree. They screwed Jabba. I think they didn't screw Sanchez as hard as they screwed Jabba, but I think
they didn't screw Jerry Sanchez. This is not a Gary Sanchez.
Jerry Sanchez.
This is not a Gary Sanchez. I'm going to start calling him Jerry Sanchez if he doesn't start playing better. Gary Sanchez did not get screwed by anybody.
I'm not a Gary Sanchez apologist. I swear I'm not a Gary Sanchez apologist.
It seems like you are this morning. It seems like you're drinking the juice of Gary Sanchez apologies.
This coffee right here,
it's filled with Gary Sanchez tears.
Well, it was his birthday yesterday.
Well, so you're getting soft on his birthday. Is that what's happening?
He turned 77 years old, considering that's how long it feels like.
His lower half is 94.
He is. I agree with you. The vast majority of the blame goes on Gary. It's the player. But I don't think it's 100% on Gary. I think the Yankees have overmanaged him or mismanaged him in some sense, not putting the right coaches around him.
You can't just do that for one player, though. The player has to adapt to the organization to a certain degree, to probably I feel like
that was the main reason we heard why Joe Girardi was let go, is because he couldn't relate to Gary Sanchez.
It was a reason that we heard that the media ran with, because it was a sexy thing to say, probably, and it was fun to talk about. It was controversial. It made the situation more polarizing. So yeah, that's why we heard about it, I'm sure. There's no possible way that was like the definitive reason why.
No,
that was happening.
I agree. There's no way it was. But
Joe Girardi hit his limit with the organization. He was right around that. He's at that 10-year mark where the organization likes to make that change, and they did. So,
do you think it's a coincidence then that Gary was better under Girardi?
It possibly. I don't know. I don't have answers. And the problem is that nobody has answers, and that's what's going on here.
No,
nobody
can put their finger on it. Your job is to pick it out of your ass and act like you have answers.
Yeah, it's a Gary Sanchez problem. Only Gary Sanchez can understand this problem. He needs to fix himself. He needs to see the light.
The article in The Athletic was titled, "Gary Sanchez's Future with the Yankees, Diagnosing What's Gone Wrong." And it's a really in-depth article, basically laying out reason after reason how things have gone wrong for Gary. On the defensive side, we heard last year about how his framing was improving. He finished 52nd out of 62 qualifiers. Okay. So it's not, or that's over the past 2 years. And last year, apparently he received 1,152 pitches. And I did the math. This doesn't add up. I think this is strikes. That's strikes that he received. So out of those 1,152, that basically just means they're less likely to be called strikes when he's catching them. He ranked 58th out of 62.
The stat that you had in here said every single one of them. Wasn't it like 100%? It was something ridiculous.
Well, yeah, but that's
basically
everything
he did was worse.
It was high. It's basically simplifying it. The writer simplified it where he's like, when Gary Sanchez receives the ball, it's less likely to be called a strike.
When Gary Sanchez caught the ball, it was worse for the team every single time. That's what the article said.
Yeah. Blocking, only one catcher in baseball has had more pass balls. So that's not good. Throwing, he is good at throwing. But what the article pointed out, teams are running less and less. So that aspect of catching is becoming less important. They're putting teams teams would rather have a catcher that receives and blocks than a catcher that can throw.
Correct. And it makes sense. It does make sense, unless you get exploited because of that catcher. So they can't be.
Those are very singular instances, though. You can be very league average to below league average at throwing the ball, and you're going to be fine.
Right. Correct. It's just it's only if you're on the bottom side of throwing where those numbers will probably get exploited more.
Right. But I still think a team would rather have you be tops in the league in blocking and receiving and bottom in the league in throwing.
Yeah, that's fair. There's so much offense going around from everywhere else and so much it's holding the runners at their bases. They're not stealing as much. So the offense is actually affecting that part of it too.
And on the offensive side, it's even uglier. So his swing percentage and strikeouts, Gary's swinging strike rate is the bottom 50% over the last 3 years. His strikeout rate has been bottom 25%. And they isolated what they called the shadow zone. The shadow zone is basically the top of the strike zone. Okay. He's been one of the worst in the league at connecting on pitches in the top of the strike zone. His plate discipline is declining. And that's something with age. As your plate discipline declines, your contact declines. It's the thing that goes.
This is not an age thing for Gary Sanchez, or at least it shouldn't be at this point.
Shouldn't be.
Right.
But that's something that doesn't. That's something that you don't improve at 32 years old.
Right. But when we're talking about age, we're talking about exactly that. Like mid 30s is when mid 30s is when you should start seeing some decline. Not where Gary Sanchez is.
My point is, and what the article's point is that if it doesn't get fixed next year, it's never going to get fixed.
Okay, yeah.
And he's slow as shit. So what that means is teams on the left side of the infield can play their infielders all the way back.
Well, yeah,
so
he doesn't run balls out, right?
That's true.
He's lazy.
But he's also slow as shit. It's like that.
Being
that video,
lazy and slow is no way to go through life.
The video of him on Instagram where he was doing wind sprints in the beach and he almost got blown over by the wind backwards because he was running so slow. But what this basically means is the infielders can play at such a depth where he basically can't hit it through the left side of the infield. It's impossible because there's three infielders playing on the outfield grass and it doesn't matter because they're going to throw him out because he can't get down the box.
Well, he doesn't hit the ball on the ground anyway, so that doesn't really matter as much.
But when he does hit the ball on the ground, even if it's 110 miles an hour, it's always an out. It doesn't matter. Whereas other guys, if they hit the ball, like other guys who are a little bit quicker, the infielders can't play as deep, the ball might get through for a single. Gary Sanchez, it's a ground ball to the third baseman.
So to be fair, that doesn't really matter very much in his game.
No, it doesn't because they basically, the article said, only 11 players get played further back at third base right now than Gary Sanchez, and their names represent some of the slowest of the slow. Miguel Cabrera, Albert Pujols, Nelson Cruz, Franmil Reyes.
Oh my God.
I mean, some of those guys are over the hill, but Nelly Cruz is still a beast.
Nelly Cruz hits home runs. He's not a beast running out balls.
No, right. So he gets played further back at third base. It doesn't affect his stats, though. He's still a beast in the box.
Because, yeah, exactly, because he hits the ball over the goddamn fence.
So Gary Sanchez, be more like Nelly Cruz.
Well, Gary Sanchez is a catcher, and Nelly Cruz is not a catcher. This is where we get mixed up. When we try to start comparing Gary Sanchez to all these big-time hitters, you just mentioned two Hall of Famers, potentially three Hall of Famers if Nelson Cruz gets in
after... But they're over the hill now. They're over the hill.
I understand
Pujols
that.
Pujols and Cabrera over the hill.
But the point is that these guys still, the way that they're effective is that they hit the ball out of the ballpark. They don't hit the ball on the ground and are effective. Then that was never part of their game. So
does Franmil Reyes even hit home runs? I'm like,
yeah, he's a big dude. He hits dingers.
So
do we ever care if our power hitters are hitting ground balls to the left side and getting out? No, we don't.
No, but what it means is it exasperates the problem to where Gary Sanchez can have a good at bat. And then at the end, you know, like these nerds on Twitter will tweet out, oh, Gary was unlucky. He hit it 109.4 miles an hour and it's an out. Well, it's because he hit it on the ground directly to the third baseman. Like that's not unlucky. That's just the other team playing where Gary Sanchez is going to hit the ball.
Yeah, no, he definitely, the velocity off the bat is not as much of a factor with him unless it's over the moon. That's when it becomes a real deal. Because he does hit, as the article says, he hits the snot out of the ball, which I love that such a great.
When he makes contact, and he makes contact bottom 50% of the league, and it's harder to launch where he's hitting the ball because the shadow zone, the top of the strike zone, that's normally a place where you're going to be able to launch from, and he can't hit the ball in that zone. He's minus 13 runs below league average in when the pitch is in that zone.
So all of this comes down to approach, mechanics, the, you know, just being prepared for an at bat. To me, a lot of this comes down to the player, the preparation, and being ready for the moment. When he does connect with a ball, playing, you know, that Mets home run or the other one, like, yes, he's looking for a fastball, and if it's in a good area where he's looking and he's ready for it in that moment, then he can hit the ball and he'll hit it well probably. But otherwise, he's not prepared. It doesn't look like he's prepared. I'm not going to say he's not prepared. It doesn't look like he's prepared. Is that more fair? Because I don't know if the player is prepared or not by looking at him watching the game. My eye test doesn't tell me if they're prepared. It just tells me what I see. And what I see is a guy that doesn't look prepared.
Well, he's getting so exposed in all of those areas that we just talked about too. His game is boiled down to those things. It's bad pitch framing. It's pass balls. It's not swinging. It's not connecting on the pitches he should.
Dog shit stat, because last year he was the best. He's such a great pitch framer, and now he's not even on the board of anybody framing
pitches. It is also, yeah, this was, I think, using StatCast's method, and I think Baseball Prospectus ranked him a bit higher on framing. But what basically it was...
It's a dog shit stat.
It wasn't that Gary Sanchez was the best in the league. It was that he improved, but he was still not great.
Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a dumb question. When robo-umps come, because they're coming at some point, do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Who's going to care about pitch framing? this big emphasis on pitch framing.
You know
framing
what I got news for you, Scott? If you think the robo-umps are going to be perfect, everyone's going to be happy with the robo-umps, you're out of your damn mind.
Oh, you think that Gary Sanchez catching a ball in a bottle, they're going to trick the robots?
I think
is that what you think? They are going to be. It is literally a technology that's extremely precise. So yes, it will be accurate.
What's the point of basically just like have a net back there?
Right, but my point is you're not going to fool the robots and the computers. Gary Sanchez ain't that fast. We just talked about
it. Right. Well, it'll be
it gets rid of that entire.
But is Gary Sanchez still going to be catching in the league when robo-umps are fully implemented in Major League Baseball? Because I don't think it's coming in, say, 2022. It's probably coming in, like, 2025, 2026 or
great,
something.
So all the kids can learn pitch framing, and then when they get up, it doesn't matter. It's just such a stupid thing. It really is. It's like, okay, how well can you deceive the umpire? That's what we're talking about.
No, I agree. We've talked about pitch framing a ton. We had, I forget who we had on, one media member on the nerd community came on the podcast talking about pitch framing. And it was Zimborski from Fangraphs. He was talking about how it's
an imperfect science.
It's the most imperfect stat in baseball, but yes. It's one of the most emphasized stats when it comes to catchers, if not the most emphasized.
Because umpires
stat.
Are stupid and a lot of them are old and MLB can't get rid of them. So we need to make sure that we put emphasis in deceiving
MLB
them.
Has a big time umpire problem. They have an umpire problem.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the root of the problem. Why are we talking about pitch framing? Oh, because Joe West is back there and we can trick him.
Angel Hernandez. I saw a funny...
And then again, does it matter? Because are you tricking them in a way that's going to help you? Or in fact, are you now catching balls that are down the middle and they think you're tricky? So
remember the Gary Jerk up? Yeah. Any ball like slightly below the
Gary
the middle
jerk
of the plate.
Up, you cannot refer to it as the Gary Jerk up. I'm sorry.
I didn't say jerk off. I said jerk up. He would take the ball and yank it up. The Gary Yank up. Is that better? The Gary Yank?
Yeah, no, I don't think that's better. But he's going to punch himself in the face one of these days. He's going to knock out an umpire with the way that he tries to frame.
How silly did it look? And I think he lost strikes.
It's one of the most ridiculous things. It looks ridiculous.
Don't you agree? Like at some times I was like, he just lost a strike.
Yes, I think that it actually does go into the back of the umpire's mind, knowing that this guy is good at pitch framing. So now it's a mental battle between the umpire and the catcher to not get fooled.
Oh, the nerds have just boiled down baseball to the worst of the worst.
Yeah.
But
like for real, if you're an umpire in the league and you know that you're behind the plate with a guy who is at the top of the league with pitch framing, Are you going to tell me that that doesn't get into your mind, that saying like, was it a strike or did he just fool me? And I think it's a strike.
Well, it's got to be in the back of their minds. Umpires get graded. So they know. They keep track of what they're doing.
This is a conversation that's not happening, that needs to happen.
Did I ever – so there's a website out there that tracks – excuse me – that tracks umpires' performance, okay? Yeah. And there was an umpire – it was like the first – I think it happened in the wild card round of the playoffs this year. He was the only umpire to get a perfect pitch strike – a strike ball record.
Yeah. Okay, they fired him the next day.
So every pitch that was he needed to call, he got right in that game according to the whatever tracking method they use. Okay? And then the article that I read basically said he was like both sides complained during the game to that umpire about the strike zone.
Well, I mean, it boils down to also the fact that there's no strike zone. That's, I mean, this has been from the beginning of time, though. The strike
zone.
No
one's ever going to be happy. Yeah. No one's happy. Both sides are mad. Basically, what it comes down to, if you call pitches, when you call a strike, unless it's down center dick, when you call a strike, one team's going to be happy, the other team's going to be mad. And that's always going to be the case.
I mean, for the most part, I guess. It doesn't matter. The point is it doesn't matter. And there's a mental battle happening here that the nerds can't see because it's not in the numbers.
Okay, so we have a mailbag question as it relates to the catching situation for the Yankees.
What if Joe West had to take a big dump in the middle of one and he's trying to get out of there?
Can we get
a problem? I think that's a problem. Joe West has to go. That's a problem.
So I would like to Ian Happ, he does the podcast on the Blue Wire Network, The Compound. Can we get him on? And I just want to talk about how players manage bowel movements during games. Like, I want to spend a half hour on it. I have so many questions.
Yeah, I will shoot
him
a text.
Can you pitch that to him?
Yes, I will. I absolutely will. Didn't we get Ben Heller to talk about this too? Ben Heller talking about he was talking about this in some capacity when he was on.
Ben Heller got tendered a contract. Jonathan Holder did not get tendered a contract.
Ben Heller is a pure... We like the arm.
But he's just always injured.
I know, but we like the player and we like the arm. And
we're gonna talk about arbitration, especially. We're gonna talk about the arbitration stuff, especially around the league where there's a ton of good players that got non-tendered. But first I want to just do this mailbag question. It's from Dom at DomK84 on Twitter. Do the Yankees sign James McCann? He seems like more of a bat-to-ball catcher with better defensive skills. Since 2019, McCann has a 114 OPS plus compared to Gary's 105. Defensive runs saved since 2019. McCann is plus 29, Sanchez minus 18. Not sure how framing and all that comes into play, but it seems like a quick upgrade at catcher at some... And some serious competition to get Gary's ass in gear. Ideally, sign McCann for a short deal and see if you can reinvigorate Gary's career. I don't know that signing James McCann is a reinvigorate Gary move. If you sign James McCann, that's a we're moving on from Gary move, I think.
Well, I mean, it depends what the contract is. But he's 30 years old. He's been a good player. So
very good season in 2020 with the White Sox. 144 OPS plus. That's a monster year for a catcher.
And I think that... I've said this before. I don't think we have to have a big production offensively from the catcher. We just don't need it. It's a luxury. It's not a necessity. And in fact, for this team, I think a guy like Dom's talking about here, that's got a decent K rate, that puts bat to ball a little bit more often, can move things around, like is a good cog for this lineup to have. Be a good defensive catcher and then be adequate at the plate. I don't need home runs out of you. I just don't. And I think that's one of the mentalities of the way. It depends how they're going to see who they're going to add, if they add, because they might not add anybody. It's very possible that they don't add anybody and they go in with Higgy and they go in with Gary. That would not surprise me one bit.
I think that they
like Higgy. So I think that they're confident enough with Higgy taking over if need be. I do believe that they actually think that.
Well, but, I don't...
And I think I'm more... I'm more bullish on Higgy than you are for sure. I think that he's got more potential.
I didn't see anything out of Higgy last year that impressed me.
Okay.
He is what he is. He's not a starting catcher. So if you're playing this year,
you don't think that people can develop, because I do think that people can develop.
I don't think Higgy's going to develop at this point. He's like 30 years. He's 30 years old. He could barely get out of AAA. The only reason he's out of AAA is because Austin Romine was out of option. Was out
of
arbitration.
Not fair. That's not fair, because there was an opportunity problem as well. He was not really ever in a position to get to the major leagues in a full time position in a capacity that would keep him up there. It was just never on the table.
Just like
Gary Sanchez Austin is that Romine. Problem, because they want if you have a guy that you see a little bit of potential and that's doing well in the minors, you want to bring him up as your backup catcher. You want to keep him there as long as you possibly can to develop him in case the guy in front of him doesn't do well. That's what happened.
Just like Austin Romine, I think Higgy is a fine backup catcher. I have no problem with him as your backup catcher, but if you're going to ask him to start 70% of the games, I don't think that he's capable of doing that.
Austin Romine did. Austin Romine, when the Romanites came out, Austin Romine was a
no.
Was
the
a
Romanites
force.
Got fooled by like a 10-game stretch where Austin Romine would hit 313, and they'd be like, "Oh my God, he's the best."
He was a fantastic backup catcher.
Yeah. What's the key word in that sentence?
But that's the thing. Like, I think the Yankees I think the Yankees could win a World Series with a backup catcher starting. Because usually the backup catcher is defensive and they make contact. I mean, I'm saying I don't think it hurts the team. I don't. I think if you have a competent defensive catcher who can make some decent contact, just league average or even below league average at the plate, I don't think that affects the prospects of the Yankees team in 2021.
But do you agree that the plan this year, give Gary one final shot, see what he is, and then if by June he's still struggling, still looks lost, that's it for him?
Yeah, I think that it cannot be a long leash. I think that we have to identify what he is early on. And that, and only that, putting a time frame on Gary Sanchez, if he's not going to do it when the Yankees put a time frame on him, and just tell him, if you don't produce by June, we need to see it now. Back against the wall, this is it. You better produce. We need to see it, or we have to move on. We can no longer wait.
If what is your plan? Plan A, have Gary figure his shit out. What's plan B?
How many catchers are acquired at the trade deadline? Not often.
No, and it's usually not a position that you acquire and have success at, because it's very hard to bring a catcher over to a new pitching system and have him work well. Like, that's something you need to do, develop in spring training and all that kind of stuff.
Was Pudge a midseason?
Yeah, and he was terrible.
Yeah, so that puts me back in the camp. So what I think at that point, they would sign a veteran guy that's probably been in the – like, I could see Eric Kratz coming out of retirement at that point.
Yeah. They just keep Kratz. They basically pay Kratz to just sit tight for a little while, be like, listen, we might need you.
Just keep your hamstrings loose while you're there. Get off the couch, you know, every 2 hours.
Practice your dry swing.
Yeah. And no, I don't even care if you swing. Don't even swing.
But is Kratz and Higgy enough –
Yes, that's my point. My point is that you do not need a superstar catcher for this team to be a World Series champion. You do not need that. You need a role player to be at that position, to play good defensively, and to not be a liability with striking out every single time at the plate. That's it. That's all I want. I'm serious. I don't care about the home run ball coming from the catcher. I don't care. It doesn't matter. The home run ball is coming from everywhere else. It does not need to come from this position.
To answer Dom's question,
have a problem with when they look at the Yankees, they need to see a superstar at every position. The best Yankees teams had role players that did their job, and it was in a vacuum. They did their job either defensively, moved runners over. They had a job and a mission when they were in the lineup. They didn't all swing for the fences. They had role players, and they were complementary.
The problem here, though, is that we've seen Gary Sanchez play like a superstar. Right, so we want that back.
Okay. What we want and what is a reality is no longer the same. And I think we all have to, as fans, come to terms with that.
Getting philosophical on us.
Well, you know. And the Yankees organization has to understand that. And that's why they have to say, hey, Gary, this is it, man. Like, you're either doing this or you're not doing this. And we're not going to be here next year if you're not doing it.
And since that's the plan, I don't see James McCann. I don't see Yadier Molina. I don't see JT Realmuto. I don't see these higher profile catchers who are going to require starting jobs or near starting jobs to be coming into the Yankees, because I don't think that there's going to, they need to give Gary one final shot. And I don't think McCann coming in and them signing him, I don't think they can give Gary a final shot if you have James McCann.
I don't think James McCann would come over unless the money was dumb because of that, because he knows Gary Sanchez is there at any moment. If Gary Sanchez gets hot, he's on the bench. So
right.
He's not going to be able
McCann's
to continue
his career. Catcher. McCann is a starting catcher.
Yadi is a different story a little bit. I don't know if that's a real thing. I know that's been a rumor, but
I think that was headlines.
It's very possible. I mean, it would not surprise me. It would surprise me if Molina left the Cardinals at this point in his career.
But, would you like that better? Would you like the plan to be Gary with Yadi better than Gary with Higgy?
No, I don't think I like one better than the other. But what I'm saying is I think the Yadi Gary is more realistic, because I think James McCann is at a point in his career that he wants to be a starting catcher, and Yadi's at a point where he wants to win a championship and be a role player, essentially. He doesn't need to start every day. In fact, he shouldn't start every day because of his age. So I think that would, again, I can't talk anymore about what would have a positive impact on Gary Sanchez, because I just don't know. I feel like they've tried to put him in positions to succeed many times, and he's just not done it. And for me, that falls back on the player. So there are motivations inside his brain, inside his body, that nobody knows about, that he needs to understand and activate. And maybe Yadier Molina, who's a legend, could do that, possibly. But I'm not going to bring him in solely for that reason.
Do you want to talk about this blocking run saved graphic that you found and the Gary Sanchez catching stance before we move on to other things?
It's just funny. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you should. Tanner Swanson, who basically runs the Yankees catching philosophy. He's he's the coordinator for the catchers in the Yankees organization. He came over from the Twins, I believe, a couple of years ago. He's really good. He's got some really interesting forward thinking philosophies. He's a big proponent of the one knee approach. The one knee approach for me, on a philosophical mechanical level, is fine if you can do it as a player. If you are physically able and you're able to make that transition into this approach, then great. It gives you a little bit more athleticism, I think. I think if you go to his Twitter account, he put up a graphic. It says 2020 blocking run saved, and basically saying that the one knee approach is not just for framing, but it's also for blocking run saved. And you know, you're seeing defensive catcher stats coming from the one knee guys. There's 20 of these guys on this list. Gary Sanchez is nowhere to be found. So,
but James McCann, Yadier Molina are both on here.
They are. Not high by any means. No. They're lower on the list.
Yadi ranked 17th, McCann 18th.
But what do you see? Romoto, you see a lot of you see a lot of backup catchers on there, do you not? You see a lot of guys who are just defensive. They have defensive prowess.
But if you look at the opportunities, you don't see, I mean, all of these guys had had a ton of opportunities, except
there's a minimum also for it.
Tanner Henneman is the lowest as far as opportunities go, right? Unless I'm missing
Joseph Odom's at 565.
Okay, so what's the takeaway from this graphic? The takeaway is that he's basically defending his one knee down approach.
Correct. And to me, when I'm looking at that, when I'm hearing that, I see this as a problem, because the person, the catcher who's at the top of the depth chart in the Yankees organization is not good at it.
Well, this graphic basically says, hey guys, get ready for Gary one knee again in 2021.
Or, hey guys, Gary Sanchez is not on this list. Look at these other names. One knee approach is a better approach long-term with players. Gary Sanchez might not be the guy. Maybe
Higgy's not on here. Higgy didn't do one.
No. If you look at the tweet, look at the tweets underneath it. If Higgy were to have qualified for this list, he would be on top.
But he didn't do one knee.
He would be on top. No, he is part of this approach. Yes, he is.
Higgy does one knee down.
Let me read the tweet. Let me go back to the videotape on this tweet itself. I'm surprised Higgy is not high on this list. I thought he did a solid job this year. He'd be at the top of this list, but had 50 BID attempts.
Hold on. I think we're not understanding this graphic. I think the guys that he circled are traditional. are the traditional approach.
No, the 54 catchers had 70 plus BID attempts. You're looking at the guys who are circled who are not traditional. That's the point.
The guys really circled are...
Those are the one knee guys.
The circled guys are one knee?
Correct.
The top four are all traditional.
That's correct.
All right.
It's still a position.
Can you retweet this image from Yankees podcast so people know, like, context?
Because I'll retweet this is what they call
bad radio right now. We're looking at a graphic that neither of us
understand.
Yeah, this is
Francesa Radio, for sure. So, to be clear, there are 20 people on this list, and 13 of them are one-knee approach guys. So, it's very telling. Hey guys, 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be more efficient, which means every single hire is critical, and Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly so you can focus on hiring the right person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other job sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only got to pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that you can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates you will see and fast. Try Indeed without free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer is valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
Football is going strong, and that's just one of the many things you can wager on at BetOnline. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still get in on the action. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can still even get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. They also have things you can bet on, like MLB Hall of Fame odds. I got an email about that this week. Some interesting things there. You can also bet on where Theo Epstein is going to take the next job if he's going to keep working in baseball. Go check it out. Don't forget to use our promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, so the arbitration news, the Yankees came to an agreement with Sessa. They non-tendered Holder. They also agreed to terms with Ben Heller. Everyone else will receive an offer from the Yankees. And as I said, we have not heard what the offer is yet. The estimates for guys that you care about, Judge was $10.7 million. Luke Voit, $7.9 million. Gio, $5.2 million. Glaber, $3.5 million. Clint, $2.6 million. Those are really the big names on there. But what I think is really interesting about this whole process is not the number of guys that were non-tendered, because I think I saw someone, I think Feinstein tweeted out that last year, like 58 players were non-tendered, and this year, like 60. So it's basically the same. But I think it's the quality of players. Like we've seen some decent players get non-tendered. Kyle Schwarber, Hanser Alberto, Eddie Rosario, Brian Goodwin, Archie Bradley, Kurt Casale. Like all of these guys have Hansel Robles.
David Dahl.
Adam Duvall. I'm just scrolling through the list. Like all of these guys produced one to three war last year. These are solid players that teams are just like, nah, we don't want to pay you.
I think a lot of it also is where they are in arbitration and the cost of the player. That's more to what it is. I think that's what we're seeing. We're identifying that this is going to be a problem coming into free agency, that the teams are absolutely cutting costs on players that aren't massively impact players.
And they're not massively impact players, but they're quality players,
right?
But which is bad news for free agents.
Yes. Well, it started last year. It started 2 years ago, really. But I think teams are identifying that they can get similar level production from guys who are either younger, earlier in arbitration, or, you know, veterans that are cheap. I think there's a weird area now for these later arbitration guys that they're just getting paid too much almost for what they're producing based on what's available and based on how the teams value the individual player.
Yeah. Do you think that means that in the next CBA, we're going to see a revamp to the arbitration system?
It needs to happen. The arbitration system is one of the biggest problems of baseball.
Well, yeah, it was designed to benefit the players. And what really now the teams have manipulated it to benefit them because right. They still hold all the control.
Yes. And it really affects players like Luke Voit. Luke Voit gets screwed by arbitration. He doesn't get an opportunity to take advantage of his prime years on the free agent market. You took too damn long and that went against him. Okay. That's relatively fair. But at the same time, he's being eligible, like the being eligible for arbitration at a certain age point should no longer be a thing. Like he should be eligible free agency much earlier than he is at this point in his life because of his age. It doesn't take into consideration as much.
Because of his service time, I believe he's a 4-year arbitration guy. But
yeah.
But in one sense, if he plays well for the next 4 years, he's going to end up banking like $50 million in arbitration.
Okay, fine, but he's not going to get the opportunity to get a free. He's not going to be able to test the free market, which is a problem.
Right.
At his age,
and he's not.
He's the exception, not the rule. But it's also those exceptions you have to look at as well, and to see how they get, you know, how it exploits the system a bit, because there are exceptions on the other side of it too. When you're very young and you get manipulated with the service time, so yeah, arbitration. System itself needs to be blowed up.
What do you think about some of these players that were non-tendered, though? Like Kyle Schwarber, the Yankees apparently, Cashman has loved Kyle Schwarber ever since there was
he's a lefty Andrew Miller
for Kyle Schwarber deal. Yeah, but Kyle Schwarber still strikes out a shit ton.
Yes, and
he's basically a left-handed Luke Voit. He's diet Luke Voit right now. He's like that big fat slob, slim man.
Luke Voit came in like 30 pounds under.
Who's that big fat slob in Seattle?
Vandal Schmick.
He's basically a copy of Vandal Schmick. Okay.
No, Vandal Schmuck is a generic Luke Voit.
he's off brand Luke Voit.
He's the bizarro Luke Voit.
Right now in the pecking order, you got Vandal Schmick is the poor man's Kyle Schwarber, and Kyle Schwarber is the poor man's Luke Voit.
Luke Voit is the winner in this whole thing. Luke Voit is the dark horse.
But talk to me in a year. Who knows? Luke Voit could get back. He could get heavier. He's like that guy Vandelbach has no neck.
I mean, Kyle Schwarber was supposed to be a prolific hitter for a long time.
He was in 2015. Then he got hurt 2016, came back, helped him win the World Series. He's been mediocre since. He was pretty solid in 18 and 19. Still only 27 years old.
Also a defensive liability. So the fact that the fact that MLB has made no decision, there's no actual determination on what the universal DH implementation is going to be. If it's going to be something it's hurting a lot of these guys. It hurts Kyle Schwarber, because if there's a DH available in the National League, he's potentially tendered.
I'm looking up the Mariners roster because I know it's not. I can't think of his name.
Vogelbeck.
That's not his name. That's his name.
I don't. I'm
Vogelschlong.
No. I'm just adding anything onto the Vogel.
So I agree with you that the DH thing hurts guys like Schwarber. I think it's pretty clear that the DH is going to come after the new CBA.
But it's not clear because it's not actually written in print. Therefore, it's not clear. That's the problem. There's a lot of gray area around that because it's not defined. If that's the case, then stamp it. Make it so that people can actually, and teams can adjust their plans for it.
Yeah. There's some other David Dahl out of the Rockies could be an interesting fourth outfield option.
Yeah. David Dahl has been an effective player. I mean, he's a good player. It depends on how many people believe in the whole Colorado thing. I think it's overblown, but...
LeMahieu.
He had a terrible 2020.
So many of these guys had terrible 2020s. Are you going to hold everyone's 2020?
No, that's a big deal in how you're evaluating what's happening now is like, how do you evaluate 2020 as a team?
The Braves non-tendered Adam Duvall. He's another outfielder. The Twins non-tendered Eddie Rosario. Like, these are now outfielders that could be really valuable fourth outfielders we didn't think were going to be on the market. That totally changes things, I think, for the Yankees. And Brett Gardner. Like, Brett Gardner is worse than all of these players. So if you're going to sign Brett Gardner to be a fourth outfielder, sign one of these guys instead.
Brett Gardner is David Duvall in 2020, 93 at-bats, batted .183. On base percentage of .222, slugging
Adam
of .247.
Duvall,
David Dahl, .247, OPS .470.
Look at his 2019. He had .115 OPS plus. He hit .300.
Yeah, no, he's not old. He's 26 years old right now.
Wouldn't you rather sign him than Brett Gardner?
Based on potential, based on what I think the player could be, and what we've seen in the major leagues at this point in their career, yes.
Yeah. And I think it's bad news for guys like LeMahieu too, who in an ordinary free agent year, non-COVID, LeMahieu just comes into New York. He puts up two top three MVP finishes. He's going to cash in free agency now because of COVID, because teams are going to start pinching pennies, because there's cheaper options out there. He might be left with nothing. He might be left with a 1 or 2 year deal again.
Duvall is he's 25% strikeout guy.
Everyone's 25 plus.
Yeah.
It's so rare to find someone in the low 20s or below. Seriously. Like, just go to the Fangraphs leaderboards. It's crazy.
Maybe that's the new Billy Beans. People are just going to look at that list and build a team based off of it.
It's one of the first things I look at now, especially because the Yankees have so many guys that strike out a ton. I want to know, is the guy that could potentially fit in this lineup, is he different? Can he do something different, or is he just another Vogelschlag?
So we should identify the catcher position from that list. You take that list, you give me the defensive metrics list, not the framing list. I want to know the good defensive stats. I want to know how they are as a receiver of the ball. I don't care if they trick the umpire as much. I want them to keep the ball in front of them, and I want them to call a good game, and I want them to make contact. That's it.
So do the Corey Kluber rumors make it move at all for you?
No. They don't. If they sign him, if they sign him, it's one of these deals like, you're okay. If it happens, it happens. If we benefit from this, we benefit from this. But I
hold on.
I don't want to see another Corey Kluber hype train other hype trains that have come through, and then us just like, okay, he's going to get hurt again, and now we got to deal with that, and now we got to bring up somebody else. This is the year to do something like that, I guess, to take some opportunities because we have some depth in AAA. But unless you're seeing a clean bill of health, if you're seeing a clean bill of health, that's a different story. That's where I'm off the train. The reason
he hasn't been healthy since 2018, though. And
yes.
So he's pitched in 8 games since 2018. 2020, he came to the Rangers. He pitched 1 inning.
Again, it depends on how you look at 2020. It's all about the player and the health and how you think he is and where he stands currently.
If people are going to look at his name and they're going to get excited, they're going to get fooled
into
like, oh my God,
we got
Cleveland ace Corey Kluber, when that's not the case.
No, but that doesn't mean if he's healthy, he's not going to be a good pitcher. I believe he could still be a very good pitcher if he's healthy. That's a huge question mark, though. So if the Yankees identify him as a healthy guy at this point, what'd you say?
34 years old.
That's not a deterrent for me. That age is not a deterrent for me. If he's healthy, if that arm is in good shape, fine. The age doesn't matter as much for starting pitchers unless you have like a bad elbow or a bad shoulder. If you have a deteriorating ligament or just a strain that keeps happening, or something's going on with your arm, and then you combine that with the age, okay, now we got problems. But the age alone is not. We've seen too many guys come out here and pitch effectively in the upper 30s for us to really use that as a bar. If it's a
Especially when it's going to be a short-term deal. Yeah,
who cares?
Because every free agent pitcher that has signed so far, Gausman, Stroman, Morton, Smiley, Robbie Ray, all signed one-year deals. Mike Minor is the only one who signed a two-year deal so far, and that was with Kansas City for $18 million. So everyone's signing one-year deals. So Kluber's probably going to be in that same camp, one- or two-year deal with incentives. That also could maybe bring back Tanaka on a one-year deal as well. Like, if Tanaka's comparing himself, I know you roll your eyes, I agree. But is Tanaka on a one-year deal all that bad? Is he a worse option?
No. I'm not rolling my eyes. I thought you mentioned that if we signed him, that you bring back Tanaka as well. No, I think you're looking at Charlie Morton. Charlie Morton's deal to me is the deal for Tanaka, is the deal for Corey Kluber. Like, that's probably the deal that those guys are going to be going after. The 1 year, $15 million.
I think Kluber gets less. I mean, the dude's pitched 8 games since
2018. Kluber could probably get that, though, if he says he's healthy and he gets a clean bill of health. I'm not saying he has to say it. Like, they literally have to do.
I would rather sign Kluber for 2 years with incentives, where the first year is nothing. It's $5 million. But if you reach 150 innings, you lock in next year for like $15 million or $20 million or something.
Okay, but I don't think he's going to sign that deal, because I think he could get 2 1-year deals and make more money.
Yeah, you might be right. But like, I think the upside on Corey Kluber, you got to try and take advantage of that while he right now.
Because yes, if you said, right. But that all goes down to if he's a, I don't need a second year to understand that. If we're going to benefit from the upside of Corey Kluber, it's going to be right now. We're not going to see a guy and wait for him to get more healthy, because I do believe that if Corey Kluber is healthy, then yes, he can be effective. That's a huge question mark. If the Yankees identify him as a healthy pitcher, then yes, there's upside potential with a 1 to 2 year deal. If you believe he's healthy, I don't want question marks in him coming in and saying, oh, now we got foreign bodies floating around in the elbow.
What are those foreign bodies?
I don't know what they are, but they're...
It's like that monolith that showed up in the desert. You see that?
Yes.
The monolith showed up in Tanaka's elbow.
I don't want to hear about floating things, particles, scar tissue, whatever the hell it is, around the elbow. I don't want to hear any cleanups. No more cleanups.
A lot of cleanups. So the Yankees still have, how many rotation spots would you say they need to fill? Three?
They need to fill, it depends what you're looking at for Severino. So
he's not going to start the season.
Right, I understand.
So that's a rotation spot.
You're identifying that as a spot, though.
Yeah.
That needs to be filled.
Yes, I don't think you can, I think because you have to assume other guys are going to get injured, you cannot go into next year without having five full-time starters to enter the season plus all your depth. Every year the Yankees are in this position where they get to the end of the season and they have one starting pitcher.
Yeah, but I identified this year in my GM plans that this is the year that you can go after an extra guy, like you're saying, an extra guy, get that depth in the major leagues, because you have the ability to stock a few guys in the minor leagues that have potential, that you've seen have success in the major leagues. The Yankees are in a rare position right now to stock up, to have an abundance of supply in starting pitchers. And they should do it.
The Yankees depth chart right now, starting pitchers.
What are they?
Yeah. Starting pitchers depth chart. Garrett Cole, number one. Who's number two? Going into 2021.
That's a good question. There's Domingo Germán is controlled, right?
Oh God, that's where you start.
I'm looking at all the control guys. I'm looking at control guys. He's having a very good Dominican. He's pitching well down in the Dominican League. So you see, he's part of the plans. Like whether anybody likes it or not, it's very very obvious that he's still part of the plans.
You're making my point where the first guy you mention after Garrett Cole is Domingo Germán as the second depth piece.
Right. There's nobody. It's Luis Severino in June, hopefully, but that's it.
Well, right. Or you're saying Devi Garcia, who has blue hair and a goatee, pitching in the winter leagues. There's Jordan Montgomery.
Does the Yankees policy say anything about blue hair? If it's above the shoulders.
It was getting a little long. So I think if it's blue but above the neckline, I think it's okay. This is the Yankees depth chart going into next year if they don't do anything else.
It's,
okay?
It's Garrett Cole, Montgomery,
Garcia, King, Herman. Literally, that is the depth chart.
I know.
If you don't do anything else, you need to sign three starting pitchers. You need to acquire three more starting pitchers, whether that's trade, whether that's free agent signings.
I'm excited for that. So the fact that you're looking at a veteran guy on a short-term deal. The way that free agency is playing out right now, it would surprise me at this point that if Tanaka didn't come back, to be honest.
Okay. So Tanaka signs a 1-year
deal. Because he's a known quantity.
Maybe they go out and trade for someone, whether it's Lance Lynn.
Give me some hot dog breath.
Give me some meat smells out of Lance Lynn.
Yeah.
Maybe it's someone lesser profile than Lance Lynn. Maybe they try and go after that controllable starting pitcher again. Okay, so that's two. Is Corey Kluber the third? Is James Paxton the third? Like, James Paxton and Corey Kluber
Do you remember my GM plans? This is exactly what I did. I signed Trevor Bauer for this reason. This is the year to do this. You go and buy Trevor Bauer.
If you're willing to do it, go do it. But they I don't should, think they're
they,
willing
they are,
to do it.
They should. Why are they not willing to do it? Because
I
of
don't know.
Because of he's a personality. Because he's a.
I don't know
a
if loaded... they want to spend that kind of money. Scott, didn't you hear? Hal Steinbrenner said the Yankees had it tougher than anyone else in Major League Baseball this year.
Well, guess what? A guy like Trevor Bauer will help you off the field because you're not going to get butts in seats. That doesn't matter anymore. You better goddamn sell some jerseys.
You're not going to have asses in seats for the first half of the season.
You better sell some jerseys. You better do some things that are garnering attention online because guess what? That's going to be a value point for a team.
You want them vlogging from the clubhouse?
Yo, if you're not identifying that as a team right now, that there needs to be some other level of capitalization on the way that these players are, then you're missing the boat because it's real.
Okay.
Trevor Bauer might be the most famous baseball player on the planet right now.
No, stop it.
I'm serious. In the age
That's
group of 13
sad.
To 24, do you think that most of them know who Trevor Bauer is? I'd say yes.
I would say he's top 20.
I'd say he's top five.
13 to 24, you're still going to get guys like Bryce Harper, who's more well-known. Aaron Judge, more well-known.
Again, Trevor Bauer is very, very prominent on social media. He's everywhere.
Alex Bregman.
He's there. Like, he's there. Not
yeah,
as a
Trevor Bauer's top 10. Fine.
But Trevor Bauer, the point is that Trevor Bauer is not known to, I think, a lot of that demographic for the things he's doing on the field, but for the things that he's doing off the field. He's become a YouTuber.
I want to just quickly mention before we wrap up. So speaking of starting pitching, the Yankees have, I read an article where they were linked to a Japanese pitcher named.
Good. Here we go. Yes.
Tomoyuki Sugano. Tomoyuki Sugano. So he plays for the Yomiuri Giants and they're expected to post him. He's 31 years old. He went 14-2 with a 1.97 ERA. 0.89 whip, 131 strikeouts and 137 innings in 2020 in Japan.
Does he throw with his right hand or his left hand? He's a right-handed pitcher.
He's a righty. In eight seasons, he's posted a 2.34 ERA. He is 1 year younger than Masahiro Tanaka is right now. The Yankees have definitely had a long history with Japanese pitchers. Tanaka, Kuroda, Ogawa, Hideki Arabu.
What kind of a pitcher is he? Do we know like his style?
Japanese pitcher.
His style of pitching. Do we know what his style of pitching is? Does he throw the ball hard? Does he not throw the ball hard? Is he a guy
I don't know.
So I think when you're looking at a 31-year-old pitcher coming over from Japan, one, you better throw a lot of strikes. Two, you better be able to...
131 strikeouts in 137 innings.
That's not
almost
a lot.
Well,
in Japan,
it's a strikeout,
that's not a lot.
It's a strikeout per nine innings. I think it's a different style of pitching there.
Yeah, to me, he's not a power guy. So... Just I don't even know anything about him. Just based on what that says, that means for me that he's probably a guy that locates well, and has a decent repertoire of pitches. And if that's the case,
that would that's how most of the Japanese pitchers are.
Well, I mean, some of them throw very hard as well. you have some guys that can throw hard. Look, the when I see his age though, and I'm seeing I need him to be a toolsy guy. I need him to be able to throw different pitches and be able to be a little bit of have some deception there. It's a shot in the dark here. I mean, sure, but I'm not depending on this guy at all ever. Yeah, you want to add him to the list? Fine. Add him to the list.
I think I probably should have done more.
I would rather you go out and focus your attention and buy and go get Trevor Bauer and trade for Lance Lynn. Give me a year and go win a World Series next year than worry about Tomoyuki Sugano and him potentially coming out at age 32.
But what if that's the third option? What if that's the third pitching option that they go into next year with? They re-sign Tanaka.
This guy's a number five pitcher at best. Come on.
Yeah, you might be right.
And probably that's a stretch. Because we don't know.
We don't know.
So...
But again, you know what? Japanese pitchers tend to have better success in the first couple years than they do middle to late
because,
years.
Because of that deception,
of
right?
Of the unknown. Right. So if you sign him for a 1 or 2 year deal, maybe you get the best years he's ever going to pitch in the majors.
Yeah, but a guy who's going to post, it's not going to be a 1 or 2 year deal.
In this offseason, this is the worst possible time to post a player.
Well, it's a good time for a team to get value, though. If they think he's a decent player, I just don't think it doesn't line up. It doesn't make a ton of sense the way that the Yankees are right now, unless they really believe in this guy and he's going to come in and be effective. I don't know enough about him, from the scouting side of things to speak if he can be if he's got potential to be a 4 or 5. We have a lot of these guys already in the system now that have the potential to be a 4 or 5. Like is this a right-handed Jordan Montgomery probably.
If anybody follows the MPB and knows anything about Sugano, send us a mailbag question and we'll read it for next week. But it's a
go thing. Go use your money and get Trevor Bauer. Use the depth you have and get a guy like Lance Lynn who's at the top of his game right now and will be an asset next year.
Of course.
And win the World Series next year.
If you trade for Lance Lynn and you sign Trevor Bauer, of course. That would be a great pitching plan.
But that's the point. The point is that they're in a position right now to do that because of the depth that they have. Because now we have competition and we have a stable of guys who can throw.
You're going to flip
that? I didn't even do that on purpose. But we have a
I like the Rays stable better than our stable. Our stable is not winning any races.
Okay, fine. We have a bus fill.
Our stable.
A short bus ride.
The saddest stable I've ever seen.
Number 4 and number 5 pitchers that can compete.
Bunch of short horses. I can't get out of the gate.
I'm just saying there's a lot of guys that can compete at the back end of the rotation right now. So go front load it.
Yep. Okay. That's it for this episode. Next week, number 500. Maybe we'll have something special in store for 500. Maybe not. Maybe it'll just be like a regular episode. We don't know yet. Anything else you want to talk about?
Sign LeMahieu. I'm still waiting. Still waiting for them to sign LeMahieu. All this arbitration talk is great.
I feel like we went through the whole episode and didn't mention LeMahieu.
It's like the cloud over the entire thing. Just sign LeMahieu, get some momentum, get some Twitter momentum. Sign LeMahieu.
Is that like a Trevor Bauer pun?
No, but it could be. That's a good one though. I did that not on purpose. See, this is it's fate. Just get Trevor Bauer over here now. Just pay for him and get him over here and let him be a lunatic who wins 20 games. That's fine.
Okay. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.